Is the Democratic narrative surrounding January 6th crumbling?
A narrative, in order to succeed, has got to have a limited amount of facts. And when facts start coming out one after the other, facts that are indisputable, that you can see with your own eyes, that contradict the narrative begins to become shaky.
And we very much owned the facts as well. If it said it in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, then that was a fact. Nowadays, people can go to all sorts of different sources for the news, and they're much more questioning about what we're saying.
It's Friday, April 19th, 2024. This is Narrative Wars. Coming up in today's show, the Supreme Court upholds a ban on gender-affirming child mutilation in the state of Idaho, and the court splits. National Public Radio is having a meltdown as a 25-year senior editor named Yuri Berliner is forced out of NPR after blowing the whistle on left-wing bias. And Speaker of the House Mike Johnson is now acting more like Hakeem Jeffries by pushing Ukraine funding and downplaying U.S. border security. Will the Speaker's chair be vacated again? These stories and more on today's edition of Narrative Wars. I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey K. Lyons, and you don't want to miss this.
We the people are sick and tired.
Let's peel back the curtain of confusion to shed light upon the mainstream media madness. And now, Narrative Wars with your host, Jeffrey K. Lyons.
We the people are sick and tired. So tired.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in following this program on social media, just search at Jeffrey K. Lyons, and that's Lyons with a Y. You'll find Jeffrey K. Lyons Narrative Wars on Getter, True Social, and X, formerly known as Twitter. I look forward to reading your comments. Before we get to our first story, I want to make a few comments on a new movie that's out there called Civil War. Well, I viewed the movie Civil War with my spouse this last week. I really have to say this movie was a waste of my time and a waste of my resources. I even spoke to a few moviegoers and they all gave the movie similar reviews. A group of young men who I spoke with, three in particular, one of them was a veteran, they stated that the movie moved very slowly. Another young man said that the movie was so bad that I owed it to my wife, who was with me, to take her out to a nice meal to make it up to her. My main contention against the movie was that the script was terrible. It never explained why there was a civil war in the United States in the first place, except for the line from the sitting president at the beginning of the film that there was an insurrection. Well, the insurrection came from a loose alliance between California and Texas, along with Florida and another 10 or so states in the South, we found out in the film. But these loosely affiliated forces are called the WF, or the Western Forces. Well, there was no explanation about who the leaders of the Western Forces are or were. There were no scenes written from the point of view of the commanders of the Western Forces explaining any of this. And how in the world do California and Texas agree on anything? Again, no explanation. But we're supposed to go along with this insipid story arc. So the audience is supposed to believe that there's an organized, well-funded, highly sophisticated military resistance threatening the sovereignty of the United States of America without ever creating a script that explains how any of this could be possible. Well, here's the bottom line. The primary rule of any futuristic apocalyptic film, it was broken here. There was no suspension of disbelief. The publication Backstage put it this way in an article that was written on April 18th, 2023. The article is called How to Make Audiences Suspend Their Disbelief. Quote from the article, audiences must be able to believe in the full reality of the world being presented to them in fictional works. Suspension of disbelief requires an unspoken agreement between the creators, performers, and their audiences. The creator crafts a world with consistent logic. The actors perform with verisimilitude, and the audience accepts the narrative taking place within that world. Well, here are my comments. Not only did the film Civil War not achieve any suspension of disbelief, but the script insulted the audience by not even attempting to create a scenario which would involve suspension of disbelief. In short, to call the script writing for this film lazy or flimsy is more of a compliment than it deserves. Astonishingly, critics gave this film an 82% on the tomato meter. I give the film Civil War 10 points out of 100. And that's not for the script. It's for a few suspenseful moments in the film that broke up the absolute drudgery of 90% of the film. If time is not important to you and you have no problem with exposing your brain cells to an embarrassment of a film, then you might want to go see Civil War. Otherwise, I recommend you spend your time and money elsewhere. Now we turn to our first story regarding the Supreme Court and the battle to protect children from gender-affirming mutilation and the castration of children in the state of Idaho. All right, we're going to jump right into our first cut, and here's a setup. The state of Idaho passed a law to block gender-affirming child mutilation in the state of Idaho. In other words, no drugs, no surgery will now be allowed in the state of Idaho under the age of 18. Now, there was a court that blocked this law, but now the Supreme Court has stepped in. Let's take a listen to this. This is cut number one, and it's 50 seconds. This is NBC News, April 15, 2024.
We're learning the Supreme Court is letting Idaho enforce its ban on gender-affirming care for transgender kids.
All right, we're going to have to break in right here momentarily. We're not going to use this language, transgender kids. There's no such thing as transgender children. There are children that have gender dysphoria. But nobody is born in the wrong body. God does not make any mistakes. So right here, we're going to throw... Yeah, there it is. There's a flag on the field. Yeah, there's a flag on the field. Okay, let's continue. Cut number one.
A law that could potentially put doctors behind bars if they give a child under the age of 18 hormones or puberty blockers or any other gender-affirming care. Lawrence Hurley is joining us now. Bring us up to speed.
Yeah, so basically the Supreme Court divided, with the three liberal justices dissenting, has allowed this law to go into effect almost fully. What they're saying is that the two transgender teens who challenged the law, they can still pursue their claim and it's not going to be enforced against them. But a district court went too far in saying that the entire law had to be blocked. And so that means that it can still be enforced against other people. And one key provision, which is one concerning a ban on surgery, which will remain blocked too.
You know, folks, this is NBC News, nothing but communism. The point is, there's no such thing as transgender children. But again, they doubled down. They said it multiple times in this piece. All right, we've already thrown a flag on the field on that. Now, as to the term gender-affirming care, no, it's gender mutilation care because you're going to sterilize these children. That's what happens when they take these puberty blockers and hormones. They commit chemical castration. That's what happens to these children. And certainly if they cut them up and snip here and cut there and tuck there, yeah, cut off body parts, these children will be scarred for life and they will be infertile. That is the bottom line. So the fact that the state of Idaho wants to ban gender mutilation care, We should applaud that. That's a great thing. Great thing, Idaho. Good job. You actually want to protect children. That's a good thing. Because now, let's think about it. You know, if a third of the children in the United States of America went through this gender mutilation care, that would mean a third of the children would be chemically castrated or castrated through the surgeon's knife. And basically, the population of the United States would be decreased. But okay, that's what the eugenicists want anyway. And so they would be delighted. So is there any surprise here that the Supreme Court split on this decision? Yeah, the three liberal justices think it's just a wonderful thing to chop body parts off of children. And so they voted for continuing gender-affirming childhood mutilation in the state of Idaho. The other six judges voted against this. Again, this is a strong case for keeping Trump in the White House and getting Trump reelected, because these are the type of justices that he puts on the Supreme Court. Justices that will actually stand up for the weakest members of society, for children. So let's dig into this a little further. So the Supreme Court reversed a court ruling. Republican Idaho Governor Brad Little signed HB 71 into law in April of 2023. And of course, it has been fought by far left activists. HB 71 made it a felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison for anyone caught providing puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, or so-called gender-affirming surgery, which we call gender mutilation care, to minors. And predictably, the transgender cult immediately filed a lawsuit. So this is the battle that's going on. This is a spiritual battle. This is also what we call fifth-generation warfare. Look, folks, if the enemies of the United States of America can neuter and cause a majority of the new generation, 30%, 40%, even up to 50% of the youngest generation, well, basically, we'll have a shrinking population. Then they'll replace that population with, guess what? People that hate us that are crossing our border. This is all a part of their plan. So coming up next, the mainstream media are melting down after a senior editor at National Public Radio by the name of Uri Berliner has blown the whistle on the persistent and pervasive left-wing bias at NPR. So USA Today, April 17, 2024, NPR editor Uri Berliner, he resigned after an essay that accused NPR, National Public Radio, of liberal bias. Now, he wrote this essay. It was published in Barry Weiss's news outlet. Barry Weiss, if you remember, she's a former New York Times writer. She formed the Free Press, and he published an article in the Free Press. And we're going to dive into that a bit deeper. Now, the National Public Radio was not happy that Uri Berliner criticized them. He had been with NPR for 25 years, but he had had just enough. And we're going to dig deeper into what he had to say, what his criticisms are. But we're going to start off this by just covering the fact that he doubled down. They suspended him for 5 days. They made it untenable for him to return to work. And therefore, he resigned publicly. He put it out on Twitter, which is now X. Here's what he wrote. I'm resigning from NPR, a great American institution where I've worked for 25 years. And Berliner wrote this. I don't support calls to defund NPR. I respect the integrity of my colleagues and wish for NPR to thrive and do important journalism, but I cannot work in a newsroom where I'm disparaged by a new CEO whose divisive views confirm the very problems at NPR which I cite in my free press essay. So we're going to jump into that essay. Let's listen to this first cut here. This is cut number 2A, and we're going to hear exactly. This is Yuri Berliner. You're going to hear him having a conversation with the Free Press founder, Barry Weiss, about how this took place. And we're going to come back on the other side of this. This is 37 seconds, and this is cut number 2A.
We were nerdy, but not knee-jerk activists or scolding. Ori, when did that start to change? When did the thing that everyone sort of recognized as sort of a liberal bias start to shift into what you call a knee-jerk activist and even scolding quality?
Well, I think it was cumulative. I don't think it was one event. Part of it was Trump's election. Like every newsroom, every legacy media newsroom, we were shocked, disturbed, distraught, really troubled. But I also think, to me, it revealed that we didn't really understand a lot of what was going on in America, that we were out of touch. But
so this is what we call a classic liberal. In a number of you that went to university decades ago at a major land-grant university, I did. I attended the University of Hawaii in Manoa. Many parts of my education were classic liberal thinking. In other words, it was not a bad thing to find out what other people are thinking and to understand the points of view, the varied points of view in the United States of America. So he mentions a couple of things here that are very important. First of all, he says, every newsroom, every legacy media outlet was shocked, disturbed, distraught, really troubled. And he's referring to Trump winning the presidential election in 2016. So right there, that tells you that there is this groupthink mentality. If you're going to get hired in a legacy media newsroom, you're expected to think like the other people in the legacy media newsroom. You know, they feign and pretend that they are non-biased. They brag about not voting in presidential elections. But the fact is, they all sing the same song sheet, they think alike, and it's very clear when you hear this. Every newsroom, every legacy media outlet was shocked, disturbed, distraught, and really troubled. Secondly, he observes, to me it was revealed that we didn't really understand a lot of what was going on in America, that we were out of touch. Now, that bridge there from being shocked that Trump won to coming to the realization, to being intellectually honest enough to come to the assessment, sort of this self-revelation, oh, I guess we really don't understand what's going on in America. Gee, I guess America is a really large country, and I guess we're out of touch. Interestingly enough, Barry Weiss, who has formed this outlet, the Free Press, her newsroom offices are in Los Angeles and New York. If she really wants to encourage thinking that will embrace the entire country, then she needs to have two news desks in the middle of the country, Nashville, Tennessee, or a news desk in a smaller town in the middle of the country. So we just put that out there. Anyway, so a couple of quick thoughts here. And I wanted to outline a few points, 4 points that Yuri Berliner makes in his essay. His essay is in the Free Press. It was published April 9, 2024, titled, I've been at NPR for 25 years. Here's how we lost America's trust. And he notes that there have been surveys in, of the audience that back in 2011, although NPR's audience tilted a bit to the left, in 2011, 26% of listeners described themselves as conservative and 23% as middle of the road. But by 2023, the picture changed. Only 11% described themselves as very or somewhat conservative, 21% middle of the road, 67% of the listeners by 2023, said they were very or somewhat liberal. So a major shift in the audience because the narrative had shifted at National Public Radio. So now we heard in that quote that he said it was sort of this slow drip towards far left lunacy that took place. My words, not his. But he said it started in 2016, where it really kicked into high gear. Trump campaign colluded with Russia over the election. That story just got hammered over and over at NPR. But when the Mueller report came out that there was no credible evidence of collusion, right? About 2 years, 2.5 years into Trump's presidency, the Russia story, Russiagate, just quietly faded. They never had any self-reflection. They never fessed up. But here's another example. The Hunter laptop story. No desire to research that story. No desire at all to have any sort of intellectual curiosity. And Yuri says the laptop story was newsworthy. But the timeless journalistic instinct of following a hot story lead, it was intentionally, that's my word, he said it was squelched. Third example, COVID coverage. The COVID coverage, they just doubled down on this fake story of a natural origin to the virus. No, it couldn't have been from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, where they were creating viruses, pathogens, and it was very close to where the virus came out and spread around the world. Couldn't have been there. And we talked about that in depth in our last podcast just a few days ago. Yuri also comments over the course of the pandemic, a number of investigative journalists made compelling, if not conclusive, cases for the lab leak. But at NPR, we weren't about to swivel or even tiptoe away from the insistence which we back, the natural origin story. You know, when they double down on a Russiagate story, false. When they double down on Hunter laptop story not being important, false. When they double down on a false narrative that the COVID pandemic came about from natural origins and we should completely ignore the lab that it leaked out of, well, that was false. And then finally, the culture at NPR, he notices, race and identity became the paramount in nearly every aspect of the workplace. All this reflected a broader movement in the culture of the people clustering together based on ideology or a characteristic of birth, affinity groups. Then he talks about SAG-AFTRA, and it's in their contract now. Quote, keep up to date with current language and style guidance from journalism affinity groups. So there are buzzwords you have to say, like gender-affirming care, transgender kids. These are buzzwords from affinity groups, and you have to use their language. So for all those reasons, Yuri Berliner spoke up and published this article in the Free Press. Let's listen to this last bit of his conversation. Of course, the conversation goes much longer, but this is just a 1 minute piece here, cut 2B, and this is Yuri Berliner still having a conversation with Barry Weiss, founder of the Free Press. This is cut 2B, 1 minute.
Evidence, it wasn't really solid, but I think it was compelling. And for us, you know, I think a lot of newspapers use documents or anonymous sources. We really latched on to Adam Schiff. He was like our muse to the Trump collusion story. We had him on constantly.
Congressman Adam Schiff is on the line. He's the top Democrat on the House committee investigating Russia's role in the 2016 election.
I think I counted 25 times. You know, and in most of those conversations, he sort of alluded to evidence he may have had or sort of teased out, you know, he was colluding or the campaign was colluding with Russia.
So do you agree that nothing happened from this meeting that we've been discussing all week?
Not at all. This is very significant. Here you have the Russians reaching out to the campaign. They were in a circle of the campaign.
And then the Mueller report came out and no collusion. And the story kind of disappeared. But to me, that was like a time for like, what went wrong? Why did we miss this? Like, despite our feelings about Trump, this is a story we should have sort of treated differently.
Well, there it is. In his own words, yeah, they should have treated the collusion story differently. And basically, all they did was they had wall-to-wall, back-to-back, I hate Trump, orange man bad reporting. There was no intellectual honesty at NPR. The point of running the story was not to be intellectually honest or to do solid journalistic work at all. The real point was to hurt Trump. In other words, they wanted to underscore the narrative, orange man bad. Ladies and gentlemen, if you found value in this program, please share it with one or two like-minded friends. We rely on listeners like you to keep this program in production. Also, please 5-star rate, and if you can, leave comments. That pushes the program up in the internet search algorithm. You can find this program on all your favorite podcast apps, such as Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and many more. Just go to your favorite app on your device and search for Jeffrey K. Lyons Narrative Wars. Coming up next, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson seems to be acting more like a Democrat than a member of the GOP. So here we go. New York Post, April 16, 2024. Defiant Speaker Mike Johnson bristles at, quote, absurd ouster threat as second Republican backs mutiny. So if you haven't been following this story, Marjorie Taylor Greene now wants to oust Speaker Mike Johnson, and the momentum is growing. Johnson fired back Tuesday. It's not helpful to the cause. Doesn't help the House Republicans advance our agenda. Let's listen to what Johnson has to say in his own words. Cut number three, and this is 33 seconds.
What is your response to Republicans who say this move should cost you your job and that if you don't resign, they will try to oust you?
I am not resigning, and it is, in my view, an absurd notion that someone would bring a vacate motion when we are simply here trying to do our jobs. It is not helpful to the cause. It is not helpful to the country. It does not help the House Republicans advance our agenda, which is in the best interest of the American people here, a secure border, sound governance, and it's not helpful to the unity that we have in the body.
So if you've been listening to Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's been saying for a number of weeks that basically Speaker Johnson has broken all of the promises he made when he secured the chair of the House of Representatives. And so she's moving to vacate the speakership. And this is because he is not backing support for the border. He is continuing to support Ukraine, and he's bundling Ukraine funding with funding for Israel. He won't separate the two. So basically, the Democrats are getting everything they want, and there is not much of a change, really, between Speaker Mike Johnson and the former Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. So the latest development is that Representative Thomas Massey, Republican Kentucky, he has now joined with Green in this threat to vacate the chair. So from this article, Breitbart, April 16, 2024, links in the show notes, Johnson was deciding vote to kill an amendment to the renewal of Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that would have required the federal government to obtain a warrant. In other words, Johnson voted against an amendment to add a warrant requirement to the FISA Act. So the government can just surveil, spy on Americans anytime they want without a warrant. Clearly a violation of our constitutional rights. But the Speaker of the House thinks that this is okay. And this is Republican governance as usual. So we're going to see. Will this go forward? This motion to vacate? I predict that this time it will fail. The reason is because they need Democrat votes in order to pull this off. And I don't think the Democrats are going to vote to vacate the chair because basically Speaker Mike Johnson is Democrat light. He's Hakeem Jeffries light. And they're getting all the major things they want. Speaker Johnson is going along with the Biden agenda, throwing obscene amounts of money at Ukraine, not funding the border, not adding a warrant requirement to FISA. So Biden's getting everything he wants. So why would the Democrats and Hakeem Jeffries vote to vacate the chair unless they just want to create more chaos? That is the only thing that would seem to make sense. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be wrapping up our program today, but I wanted to make a few final comments addressing the question, are we facing the end of Western civilization and the systematic destruction of our children being led by the medical industry? Now, how could I ask such a thing? Well, in the earlier story about the Idaho ban upon transgender surgery and hormones and drugs being given to children with gender dysphoria, it came out in that story that the endocrine society has been corrupted. Let me read you this statement right from the Endocrine Society. And that's Endocrine Society, they have to do with hormones. That's what they study. So what are some of the topics that Endocrine Society researches? Well, they're topics that affect pretty much every level of medicine you could imagine. Adrenal health, bone health, osteoporosis, cardiovascular system, endocrinology, diabetes, glucose, chemicals in the body, cancer, female reproductive systems, obesity research, thyroid cancer. So this is a very wide area of research. So Endocrine Society has now come out with this statement, quote, emerging science shows that gender identity has a durable biological underpinning that needs to be considered in policy decisions. Our position statement and clinical practice guidelines are setting the tone of the debate as thought leaders on gender incongruence. So they won't say gender dysphoria. Gender incongruence. We want to ensure transgender individuals, so they have accepted the lie that there are such things as transgender people. We here at Narrative Wars say this is a lie and that these are people with gender dysphoria. We continue with their statement. We want to ensure transgender individuals have equal access to medical care and insurance coverage. There it is, right there. Flag on the field, folks. Flag on the field. It's all about the money. It's all about the money. They want access to care from members of the Endocrine Society. They want access to medical care, and they want insurance coverage, which means billable dollars. And that's why we're throwing the flag on the field. This has nothing to do with helping children with gender dysphoria. It just has to do with making doctors rich, paying off their big medical school bills that are still hanging over their heads, and paying for the BMWs in their garages of their million-dollar homes. So that's what's going on here. Now, the Transgender Medicine and Research Statement, December 29, 2023, this is from the Endocrine Society. And here is what they are saying. Major medical and scientific organizations, including the American Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, and the American Academy of Pediatrics, they're all in alignment with the Endocrine Society on the importance of, there it is again, gender-affirming care, which is actually gender-affirming child mutilation and sterilization, because that's what happens. They become million-dollar price tags throughout their life, and they become sterilized. So they're all in on it, folks. The American Medical Association, the American Psychological Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the Endocrine Society. They all want more billable hours, more money for the doctors at the expense of our children. So we at Narrative Wars are saying this is wrong, this is evil, and this must stop. The good news in all of this is that the state of Ohio has done the right thing. Associated Press, January 24, 2024. Ohio bans gender-affirming care and restricts transgender athletes despite the GOP governor's veto. So what happened? Well, there was a law written, passed by the legislature, which banned gender-affirming care in the state of Ohio. The Republican-dominated Senate voted Wednesday, and this was articles written January 24, 2024, to override the GOP governor, Mike DeWine's veto. So this new law bans gender-affirming care surgery and drugs given to children to sterilize them prior to the age of 18. So this is the state of Ohio. Our first story in today's podcast was the state of Idaho. So at present, there's about 20 states that have banned gender-affirming childhood mutilation throughout the United States. And this is a good thing. So we're thankful. We're very... thank you, guys. Thanks, guys, for chiming in there. We really appreciate that. You know, America shall remain the land of the free and the home of the brave. We have to protect both the unborn and the next generation, especially vulnerable children that are under the age of 18. We must protect them against these evil doctors that want to carve them up and sterilize them. This is gender-affirming childhood mutilation, and it is wrong. America shall be a place where we still proclaim liberty throughout the land. And that's a comforting thought. Until next time for Narrative Wars, I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey K. Lyons.
We the people are sick and tired. Hey! So tired. Hey!